wrong way.
I like how we immediately start off with something bad.
It's always something bad every single time.
And it's always your computer.
It is my, I told you, problem child. Okay.
Nice. Are you settled?
I'm as settled as I'm going to be.
Good. Okay. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm all right. My cat's feeling better, so.
Yay.
I'm very happy.
Yay.
Although it turned chilly here for a few days, and it's going to be 86 next week.
That's funny. What's chilly to you?
It's 70s, maybe.
You want to know the temperature when I woke up this morning? 25.
No, that would kill me. I'm like freezing. I can't do it. I cannot do it that cold.
Just wait for the day where we record and I have a winter hat on and a scarf wrapped around me.
Turn I bought your heat this. On.
I have my heat on. I haven't
you
set
have a
it
fireplace.
68. I'm not making a fire. Are you kidding?
I would love to make a fire. But I'd be so scared to live in an apartment complex with fireplaces. I'd be scared of other people not knowing how to build a fire.
Yes. Yes.
So I don't blame me for being cautious.
And my cat likes to play in there. So
well, she's already a black cat. How do you know? Like, she's not going to come out dirty.
It's funny. She'll go in there.
You have
and,
no
like,
idea.
I'll just see the eyes. I'll just see her, like, yellow eyes. But, like, it's dark in the fireplace.
It's like that meme where it's, like, pitch black. And then the next frame is, like, two cat eyes. And it's just a really dark cat somewhere dark. And it says, if you stare into the void long enough, the void stares back.
She's my void.
Okay, I figured it out. Yay. Okay, I'm set. I'm officially okay. Ready.
Okay, cool.
It took 30 minutes.
God. That's good for us.
I guess it is. By the way, I'm Dana.
I'm Kristen.
And this is The Darker Side of Life. Thank you for joining us this week.
Yes, welcome or welcome back.
This is the podcast where two best friends tell each other creepy stories, and the storyteller does not tell the storytellee what they're going to talk about.
But you're going to give me a hint this time so I can try and guess?
If you want one, yes.
I do want one.
Okay, there's soap involved, but this is not a clean story. That's very vague. That's a terrible hint.
Is somebody going to make soap out of somebody?
Possibly.
Okay, I have no idea, but that's...
It's something where... you've heard of before.
It is something I've heard of before.
That's so crazy. No, I was like, it's just, why would you think that, like, immediately? Like, somebody makes, kills somebody and grinds them up and makes soap out of them.
Because you know my mind.
Exactly. That's probably everybody's minds went there. Like, that's not a terrible hint. That's an easy hint. But yes, to answer your question, somebody will get killed and made into soap.
Okay. I just, okay. I don't know the case.
You don't? Good.
I don't
know. The name might sound familiar.
Okay.
We're going to Italy with this one.
Okay.
So I've decided to punish myself and try to read Italian this time.
This is new.
Usually it's Russian or, you know, Hungarian or something, but we're moving a little farther west in Europe. So I'm going to tell the story about Leonardo Cinciulli, a.k.a. the soap maker of Correggio.
Never heard of this.
Really?
No way was I going to guess this.
Oh, okay then. Okay, so the sources are mainly foreign websites translated into English.
Okay.
Because I have to find the most complicated things, apparently. I can't make it easy on myself. The Museo Criminologico, which is the criminology museum in Rome, has a website with a feature on her. A magazine, focus.it, out of Italy. That one was in English, though. A blog called Providencia by a man named Romeo Vitelli, who was a psychologist in private practice. A Spanish website called Horrors Revealed in English. I can't say it in Spanish because I can't roll my R's very good.
No, I can't either.
And so I'm not going to try because it's going to be terrible, although probably kind of funny. And, of course, the good standby Wikipedia.
Wikipedia!
So Leonardo's life was tragic from the very beginning.
Starting out strong.
It started before she was even born because she was conceived when her mother, Emilia, was raped.
Oh.
And it turned out to be a surprise and unwanted pregnancy, obviously, for her. And it was made worse for her when she found out she was pregnant. She was forced to marry the man that raped her.
Oh, my God.
So right off the bat, we're off to a shitty start.
Yes.
Leonardo was born in 1894 in the town of Montello, which was at the time in one of the most poorest areas of Italy. Her father, who was the rapist, died when she was young, and so her mother remarried another man who Leonardo really didn't get along with. But Leonardo also never had a good relationship with their mother either, and it's sad to say, but it's likely because Leonardo was an unwanted child born out of rape, so her mother was forced to have her when she didn't want a child.
Mm-hmm.
So Leonardo suffered from a lot of emotional abuse from her mother, physical abuse, so much so she tried killing herself 3 times when she was younger.
Oh my God.
Later, she would write a memoir and had this to say about her childhood. This is a quote from it. "I was a weak and sickly child. I suffered from epilepsy, but mine treated me like a burden. They had none of the attention for me that they brought to other children. Mom hated me because she didn't want my birth. I was an unhappy child and I wanted to die. I tried twice to hang myself. One time they arrived in time to save me and the other the rope broke. Mom let me know that she was sorry to see me alive again. Once I swallowed 2 sticks of his torso, always with the intention of dying, and ate some shards of glass, but nothing happened." I don't know what 2 sticks of torso is. It's probably some translation between Italian and English that didn't go over well. So either way, I think it just means she ingested something to try to end her own life.
Maybe some kind of medicine or chemical or poison or something.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah, she ate it with that and some shards of glass. And
oh, shards of glass. That is, oh, that's terrible. Like, it's all terrible. But the think about, like, swallowing shards of glass.
Oh, no.
Oh.
That's like some Jigsaw something. You've seen a
and
Jigsaw
so
movie.
And so sad that, not that like her mother is justified in treating her that way. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it would be a difficult situation all around. You're raped. You're forced to have this child that's born from this violent encounter that you had. So, I mean, kind of understand her mother's problems.
Yeah.
But then you understand like... not understand. You don't understand. That's awful. It's just awful all around. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's just, you feel bad for everybody.
And plus, they're one of the poorest areas, so you can't afford to keep her.
Right. And to tell your child, "I'm sorry to see you alive," like, it's not her fault.
As a teenager, Leonardo was said to have a stocky appearance and a masculine face, so she might not have been to what the beauty standard was at that time. And she was also really superstitious. And she came to believe her mother had put a curse on her. She visited a fortune teller who told her, "You will marry and have children, but all of your children will die." And spooked by this fortune teller, she later visited another one, a palm reader, and was told, "In your right hand, I see prison, in your left, an asylum."
Oh, okay. So, not good. Either way.
Things are not looking very well for her.
No.
In 1914, just before World War I, she met and married a man named Raphael Ponsardi. Her parents, especially her mother, did not approve of him as a match, and so, of course, they're going to get married. Later, the couple moved to a town called Liguria, Italy, where Raphael grew up. And there, and I never found any details on this, just mentions of it on several of the websites, that Leonardo was convicted of fraud of some sort and spent a few years in jail.
Hmm.
I don't know what kind of fraud.
Yeah, there's a lot of different kinds of fraud, but...
yeah, like, so what do you... like, I don't know. I don't know what that was. And Raphael then took up drinking. He quit his job, and he was said to have pretty much just been an alcoholic after this point.
Oh, so she went to jail. Like, on one hand, there was jail, and the other was...
an asylum.
An asylum, so she's got the jail part.
Yeah, but she'll have more jail part coming up. Spoiler alert. Well, you know she kills people.
Well, she makes soap out of people, so.
that's not really a huge spoiler. I feel kind of bad for her. Like, you already know she's going to kill people, and that's not going to be good. But, like, her early life was tragic.
Yeah, and I have struggled with this before, and I've listened to different podcasts and just discussions on, like, serial killers. And. Yeah. That you go back and you look at their childhood, just having like awful childhoods and feeling that like you feel that kind of back and forth of like, I don't want to feel sorry for them because of what they've done, but they've had this, they had this awful childhood. And I've heard it, somebody put it really good. They said, you can feel empathetic for the child and circumstances that they were put into and behaviors and things that shaped their choices later in life. Like, you can feel bad for that child and also think that the serial killer that they become is an awful, terrible person and not have sympathy for that person. So yeah, like, you feel bad for her that she was put into these circumstances that were out of her control. She didn't choose to be born out of rape. She was, and her mother treated her awful. It's not her fault, but you feel bad for that child. But then, you know, knowing what she does later, or I don't know what she does later, just that it involves soap, but people soap.
Well, it's like at some point you become an adult and you know right from wrong.
Right.
In the late 1920s, somewhere between 1927 and 1929, the couple moved to Lacedona, Italy. In 1930, the town was struck by a massive earthquake and their home was destroyed. They then moved to Correggio, where finally things started to seem like they were looking up. Leonardo began selling used clothes, like she's running a thrift shop, maybe. And they received some compensation from the government from the earthquake, so they have a little bit of income now. Mm-hmm. However, Leonardo's encounters with the fortune tellers were always in the back of her mind. Throughout her marriage to Raphael, Leonardo became pregnant 17 times.
Whoa.
17 times.
Wow, that's a lot of pregnant.
That is a lot of pregnant. And remember, one of the fortunes was that she would marry, but all of her children would die.
Mm-hmm.
Of these 17 pregnancies, 3 were born premature and died. Mm-hmm. 10 died as children at a young age. And so far now, we only have 4 that have survived.
My
we have
Lord.
Giuseppe, the oldest son, Bernardo, Biagio, and Norma.
Norma. That's such an American name. Norma.
Everybody has these like nice like traditional Italian names, and you hit me with Norma.
Norma. No offense to any Normas out there.
To say Leonardo was protective of her children is an understatement. I mean, yes, partly because of the fortune teller's comment and that 13 of her other children had already died. Yeah. But remember, she wasn't loved by her parents either, especially her mother. So she was determined. She was one of these moms that were going to give her kids everything that she never had. She's like a helicopter mom to the max. Giuseppe was her favorite. Of course, he's the oldest and he's the first, you know, survivor. So he's kind of her firstborn, I guess. First surviving one that lived a long time. And she was super protective of him. He studied literature at the University of Milan. He was a tutor at the National College of Correggio. So he was kind of an academics and, I guess, a college student. And this is where some of the translations from Italian to English aren't always perfect, because the Criminology Museum writes that the second and third children, Bernardo and Biagio, attended the gymnasium in Correggio, and Norma attended the asylum of the nuns. So I assume, I don't know what
I think gymnasium is like a school. I think that that's...
Okay. They're not like just going to like lift weights, you know, for 8 hours a day.
No, I think it's something like a school. The Asylum of the Nuns is a little different. Maybe that's like a convent. Yeah.
That's what I figured. But also, I never find anything else about Raphael after this. So some places mention that he took to drinking too much, became an alcoholic. But then after Leonardo has her children, like, very few of these websites have him in the picture anymore. So he sort of falls off the map. I don't know if he's still around. I don't know if he's in the background. I don't know if he has any role in their lives at all. I just don't know. But 1939 rolls around. And what happens in 1939? Hitler invades Poland.
Yes.
And World War II starts.
Yes.
And most articles I read said that Benito Mussolini began drafting young men into the war, but the Horrors Reveal blog said that Giuseppe wanted to go serve in the war. Either way, that did not settle well with Leonardo. She did not want him going to serve in the war. She feared losing him in combat more than anything.
Well, yeah. I mean, you're this helicopter mom who watches over your children, and then one is going to war, you know, where you have no control.
She would later write the memoir. It's called Confessions of an Embittered Soul. And I can only assume parts of the quote come from this writing on the Criminology Museum website. It's attributed to her. Quote, I can't bear the loss of another child. Almost every night I dream of the small white coffins of those others swallowed up one after the other by the black earth. That's why I studied magic. I read books that talked about palmistry, astronomy, conjurations, hexes, spiritism. I wanted to learn everything about spells to be able to neutralize them. So she began to see herself as kind of a magical person, and she would do card readings for her friends and do their horoscopes and try to figure out what the future holds for them. And she tries to use her knowledge to ward off bad luck for herself as well. So when the inevitable happens and Giuseppe gets called to serve in the war, Leonardo was anguished. Until that is, she figured out what she had to do. In order to keep balance in the universe and to keep her son alive, she needed to give a life for a life. So basically, she had to sacrifice somebody else in order for her son to stay alive. Not only that, though, she has four children. So she needs to sacrifice four victims in her mind.
God. Is this like a one-time thing or?
We'll get there.
Okay.
She was friends with a 50-year-old woman named Faustina Setti. She lived in Correggio with her and she was kind of bored. She wasn't married. She just kind of had a dull life in a small town. So Leonardo offered to help her find a husband.
Oh.
She says she knew of a man in a nearby village called Pola. The village was Pola, not the man, who was wealthy, single, and looking, and that they would make a great match. Leonardo persuaded Faustina to write letters to him, and more importantly, write letters to her friends and relatives and let them know that she planned to move away. She also advised her to sell all of her belongings. Just don't tell anybody that she's going to marry him because it's going to make all of her friends jealous of her.
Oh, no. I see where this is going.
Nowadays, that kind of deal would give everybody, like, a giveaway at the Red Flag Factory because it's got caution written all over it.
Well, yeah. Like, people like you and me who, again, have these brains where
right.
someone says soap and I think, oh, someone got made of soap. It's like...
Well, she probably has no reason to not trust her.
Right. Right.
It's like catfishing, though, before the internet.
Right.
Like, there is no man in Pola. There's not.
Oh, poor girl.
At least I don't think there was.
I'm sure there was one man.
On what was supposed to be her last day in Correggio, Faustina went to visit Leonardo for the last time to write the letters that she wanted her to write and to pay her for her services, her matchmaking services. About 30,000 Italian lira at the time. That's about $20 back then. It's about $375 in today's money when adjusted for inflation, according to inflation calculators. I don't know. To me, that's not a lot. If you're planning on killing somebody and, like, taking all their money, like, go big or go home.
Are you going to say, like, clean them out? But at the same time, that could raise more red flags. Like,
that's true. That's
where
true.
Did you
that's
get all
point.
This money? If you're just taking like little chunks here and there of people's money, that doesn't raise a lot of red flags with people.
That's a good point.
See?
Faustina apparently couldn't read or write well, so Leonardo dictated what to say and helped her. How convenient. She said Faustina had dyed her hair in order to look younger.
Oh.
I know. Leonardo fixed her a drink, and Faustina was apparently grateful that Leonardo was able to help her write the letters, and she was happy that she would be able to get them mailed right away, right after she reached Pola. Except Leonardo hit her over the head with the butt end of a hatchet, and then proceeded to chop up her body into 9 smaller pieces.
My God.
According to the official statement that she gave to police afterward, and this is a quote, I threw the pieces into a pot, added 7 kilos of caustic soda, which I had bought to make soap, and stirred the whole mixture until the pieces dissolved in a thick, dark mush that I poured into several buckets and emptied in a nearby septic tank. As for the blood in the basin, I waited until it had coagulated, dried it in the oven, ground it, and mixed it with flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs, as well as a bit of margarine, kneading all the ingredients together.
She baked something from her blood?
I made lots of crunchy tea cakes and served them to the ladies who came to visit, though Giuseppe and I also ate them.
What a psycho.
Little bit of cannibalism, just a tad in the story.
Oh my God.
Just a little. A few days later, she sent Giuseppe to Pola to drop off the letters because they needed to have the postmark from there and nobody would be immediately suspicious. Then she sold whatever belongings Faustina had brought with her to her house and she kept the money.
Did Giuseppe know that this was happening? Like, did he know he was eating people tea cakes?
I don't think so.
Or was he just like, okay, I'll drop
these
letters off?
No, I don't think he knew. That comes up later on, and I will talk about that in a little more detail about whether he knew or not.
Okay.
I think if I knew somebody that couldn't read or write well, and suddenly I got a nice handwritten letter from them, I might be a little suspicious.
Yeah.
I would just be like, dude, like, your vocabulary has improved.
Good job.
I know. Like, let me just write back or something, you know?
Okay, you're cursive.
But I think it may depend on how severe their illiteracy was, because right. if it was somebody that couldn't read or write hardly at all, and then suddenly I get a letter, I am going to be very suspicious.
Right.
But also, like, this poor woman's just living this, like, dull, mediocre life, and she might not have been the happiest in the world. And then she's starting to thinking she's going to go start a new life somewhere else with somebody else, and she's all excited about it. Like, she dyes her hair to look younger and, like, tries to make herself look good. She was probably so hopeful and happy, and then bam, murdered.
This is the perils of being single.
Leonardo then met a woman named Francesca Soavi. S-O-A-V-I. I think it's Soavi.
No idea. Sounds good.
Yeah. Okay. Who, unlike Faustina, she didn't really care to find a husband or get married. She was perfectly happy being single. My girl. Except she didn't like her current job and she wanted a new job. So she went to see Leonardo, the fortune teller, to see what could be in store for her. And what do you know? Leonardo just happens to know about a job opening in a nearby city.
Oh, shocker. She's so helpful.
I know, isn't she? Since her first murder went so well, Leonardo copied the same method for Francesca. She says she found a job for her at a boarding school in another town, persuaded her to keep the job a secret until she was able to leave for it because people might be jealous or somebody else might go try to grab it up out of your, you know, out of your hands. She told her to write letters to her loved ones, let them know that she'd be moving and what she was doing. But give those letters to me so I can send them for you, is what she told her.
Yeah.
I'll send them on your behalf. I'll just take care of everything. On September 5th, 1940, Francesca came to visit Leonardo before leaving town. Leonardo convinced her to write two postcards that she offered to mail for when she left, but I think Francesca needed a little more convincing to do this, because to me that seems a little suspicious. Like, I'll just drop them in the box when I get there. I'm on my way.
Right.
Why would you make a special trip to another town just to mail a letter? Or,
and also, why do you keep having me write things? Like, I just need a job. Like, quit having me write letters and postcards. Stop.
Right. Like, why not just write one letter and then they can, like, go tell a friend?
Right.
We can do it that way. So Francesca eventually began writing the letters, and Leonardo again snuck up behind her with an axe, hit her over the head, dismembered her body. She only got about 3,000 lira this time, so not as much money, but it was all Francesca had on her at the time. So Leonardo gives the letters to Giuseppe, tells him to go mail them from the nearby town to get that city's postmark. And she had him go to Francesca's house later on and sell whatever, like, of her belongings was left in there. Hmm. And she said, you know, he could keep whatever money he earned from that for, like, going to these towns and mailing off the letters. So he's, like, having a yard sale, I guess.
Of someone else's stuff?
Of somebody else's stuff.
That's weird.
I think I might be a little suspicious if I was like, wait a minute, that's Francesca's house. Who is this guy selling her furniture?
Oh, yeah. I was thinking you'd be suspicious if you were Giuseppe, but I can see why he wouldn't be, because it's his mom. Like, he might be a little suspicious, but it's like, but it's my mom. Like, okay, like, that's fine. But, oh, yeah, if you're, like, a friend of hers, then, yeah. You're going to be like, who is this guy? Why are you selling all of her stuff?
He probably thinks, like, mom protects me. She loves me. She cares about me. She's never going to do, like, anything that's going to get me in trouble because she loves me so much and she's so protective.
Right.
So he probably has no reason to doubt her whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So she's probably like, Francesca's moving. You're a strapping young man. Will you go help her move her, like, sell her stuff?
Right.
And, like, you can take all the money. So he never questioned her.
Mm-hmm.
Her third victim was a 53-year-old former opera singer who had sang professionally at La Scala, which is a famous opera house in Milan.
Yes.
Her name was Virginia Cacioppo, and she was the wealthiest so far of all of Leonardo's victims, although now she kind of longed for fame again since she had sort of kind of faded away a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
She also wasn't the happiest in her life either, but she had money, so she was doing okay. Leonardo knew this was a weak spot for her, so she said that she knew of an impresario in Florence, and he had an opening for a secretary that she could have if she wanted it.
Wow. Again, Leonardo for the win.
I mean, at least she's back in the game. She's back in the music world, in the opera world. She can make all these new connections, like being working for this impresario guy. Like, you can get back on stage.
Right.
Leonarda again told her not to mention the job to anybody. And this time she told her that a man was a former boyfriend of hers. And if people found out they were still in contact, it would cause a ton of drama with her family. So don't tell anybody you're taking the job with this man, because my family will be pissed.
Okay.
So Virginia, though, was super excited to get back in the game. She was so happy. So she brought about 50,000 lira of cash and jewelry with her to her last meeting with Leonardo. That's about $550 today. On September 30th, 1940, this makes two murders in a month now, Virginia went to visit her and ended up with the same fate as the others, hit over the head, dismembered, and made into soap and cakes.
Oh, is she selling the soap or is she using it? Because she's
probably
eating
both.
Cakes.
Leonardo said, quote, "It ended up in the pot like the other two. Its flesh was fat and white, and when it dissolved, I added a bottle of cologne, and after a long boil, acceptable creamy soaps came out. I gave them as a tribute to neighbors and acquaintances. Even the desserts were better. That woman was really sweet."
That's disgusting. Well, and she refers to it as it.
And that woman.
And that woman. Like, she's, like, distancing herself from the fact that that's a person.
Keep that in mind. That is a very good point that you just made.
This is a person. I'm just going to say it.
Right. Virginia, fortunately, was Leonardo's last victim, and she would never get her fourth.
Uh-oh.
Because Virginia's sister-in-law was apparently a really nosy person.
Yes,
and she
finally
remembered watching Virginia enter Leonardo's house, but she never saw her come back out. First of all, are you stalking the sister-in-law or something?
I mean, don't stalk people, but thank God for stalkers at this point.
Like, did you give her a ride maybe and then drop her off and she's like, you don't have to pick me up or something? I don't know. But she was suspicious. A few days later, she saw the same woman who she saw answering the door at Leonardo's house at Virginia's house trying to sell off all of her possessions.
Yeah, red flags everywhere.
So she's like, wait a minute. She puts two and two together real quick. So she went to the police commissioner, Reggio Emilia, and told him of her suspicions. He began looking into the matter and followed a treasury voucher by Virginia that had been given to the bank. And I imagine those are like checks or money orders. It's just something that's not cash that has a name and a signature and is traceable to a person. He traces it back from the bank to the person who deposited it, who was a priest. The priest said his friend, Alberto Spinarelli, gave it to him. I love that name.
Spinarelli.
I love it so much. Gave it to him to deposit, and Spinarelli told the commissioner that it was given to him as a debt settlement by Leonardo Cianciulli.
Ooh, okay.
So now he has one piece of direct evidence linking her to Virginia's disappearance.
Yep.
So here's where most sources say that when questioned about the voucher, check, money order thing, Leonardo immediately confesses to the murders. However, some say she resisted until they asked about Giuseppe going to mail the letters. And after she learned that he could be implicated as an accomplice, that's when she confessed.
So she still wanted to protect him.
Yes.
From everything.
I think that's probably the most likely scenario, because I don't see why somebody would just confess to three murders immediately when they're like, hey, how'd you get this check? Like, I don't think it's that easy. I think they probably did learn that he mailed all the letters and he had some part in it. And they're like, well, look, he's your accomplice. And she's like, no, 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 no. Okay, I take full responsibility.
She's like Gemma Teller from Sons of Anarchy.
She kind of is.
That will do any, if you've not watched Sons of Anarchy, this won't make any sense. If you have, you'll get it. But like, she will do anything for her son, no matter what. Even if it's killing, she's going to do whatever it takes.
Leonardo is arrested for the three murders. Giuseppe was also arrested. However, later he was let go when it came out that he actually did not have any idea whatsoever what was going on when his mom asked him to go mail the letters. He just simply went and mailed them. Mm-hmm. But they were all still sealed. He didn't know the contents. He didn't read them. And there's no crime in mailing a letter.
Right.
You know, he didn't know that there was any kind of fraud or murder or anything going on. And I guess him not asking, you know, what the hell, mom? Why am I going here to these towns and mailing letters all the time? I guess that worked out to his benefit because he was released and all of his charges were dropped. Leonardo ends up waiting 6 years to go on trial.
Jeez.
That's a long time.
Yes.
But right now, World War II is raging, and apparently regular murder trials are just not a priority in Italy at the moment.
Yeah.
And it was during this time that she wrote that memoir, Confessions of an Embittered Soul. Because, I mean, she had time.
It's been 6 years.
She has time. But this might be important later, so just keep it in mind that she wrote it in 6 years after her arrest and before her trial. She was also unusually open and transparent with police regarding the murders of Francesca, Faustina, and Virginia, and she told them in detail exactly how she was able to cut them up and dispose of the bodies. And finally, her trial date did come, and she faced charges for the three murders. However, the investigators were a little skeptical at this time, because they thought this small, like, 5 foot tall, like, little old lady could not be physically able to kill and cut up and completely dispose of three bodies as well as she did and as fast as she did.
She had 17 children. Pretty sure she can do anything that she wants to. Like,
they were convinced that she had an accomplice, and Mr. Spinarelli, who she gave the check to, was cleared. Police were again looking in Giuseppe's direction. He already admitted during the trial that he mailed the letters, but again, he didn't know the context, the contents of them, or the circumstances in which they were sent. Mm-hmm. He was just doing a favor for his mom. So to save Giuseppe once more, according to the Criminological Museum, in a 1946 newspaper article from Milan, Leonardo offered to demonstrate how quickly she could break down a body and make it into soap. The Milan News article said that police and doctors accompanied her to a local morgue where she expertly, quote, expertly dissected a corpse into 9 pieces in the astonishing time of 12 minutes. They said the entire time from murder to a bar of soap was like 1 hour, 40 minutes.
I don't even know where to start with that.
That's like some Dexter Morgan shit.
But yeah, and the fact that they're like, okay, show us how you did this.
And she's like rolling up the sleeve.
Like, honey, you are doing yourself no favors. Like, do you not realize?
God, no. Well, she's trying to save Giuseppe, so she's doing Giuseppe a favor.
She's doing anything.
She does not care right now, I guess, what happens to her. She also would correct the prosecutor when he got details wrong. Her defense attorney is face-palming so hard right now.
He's like, I'm done. He's like, I'm done.
Can we just enter a guilty plea and get it done? Like, we don't even
seriously,
need to go through this.
Like, obviously, yeah.
But at one point, she would get defensive, and she proudly said, quote, I gave the copper ladle, which I used to skim the fat off the kettles, to my country, which was so badly in need of metal during the last days of the war. So she was very proud that she used the copper ladle that she needed to get away with her murders to the country for the war effort.
That is called a sociopath.
That's like, good for you, Leonora.
Like, my God. Okay, you're right. You know what? We'll let you go because you gave your ladle to the country.
Oh, thank you so much. You don't know how much that turned the tide. I mean, we have atomic bombs dropping in places, but your copper ladle is what turned the tide.
You saved us. Let's just ignore the 3 people you made into soap and tea cakes.
Yes.
Collateral damage.
Giuseppe was still convinced that his mother was innocent, but authorities now believe that she did act alone and that she was found guilty of the murders. Her sentence was 30 years in prison and 3 years in an asylum, fulfilling the fortune teller's
prison.
Prophecy to her asylum. That in one hand she saw prison and the other an asylum. You sounded like a cheerleader. Prison! Asylum!
Asylum!
While in prison, Leonardo wrote, crocheted, and baked sweets that no other prisoner would eat.
I was going to say, please, nobody eat them, please.
I mean, I think it's safe to say there's probably no human parts in any of these cakes, but they were kind of superstitious too, and they thought like maybe she put some kind of weird magical something in it, or drugged or something.
I mean, I just wouldn't want to put it past her to find something weird to put it in.
She died while in the asylum in the town of Pozzuoli on October 15th, 1970 of cerebral apoplexy and was buried in the paupers portion of the town cemetery. Here's where the writing comes in and why I mentioned to remember that later. She had 6 years between her arrest and trial date. And during that time, she wrote Confessions of an Embittered Soul. And it was actually in this book how Giuseppe and the other children realized that their mother was guilty, because that's when she actually wrote that she confessed. And
okay.
That's when they read it, like, in her own words. They refused to believe it until they heard, or rather read it from her herself.
I mean, did they read it before the trial? After the trial?
After. Probably after. Because during the trial, Giuseppe kept thinking his mom was innocent. So it probably wasn't until maybe after her death that...
It's like your mother just demonstrated how she could dismember a person in 12 minutes and that didn't convince you?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
She always said that she didn't kill for money, but she really did believe that she needed to offer the universe a human life in exchange for her children's lives. In an Italian magazine called Focus, a criminal sociologist named Raphael Setta was interviewed about her, and he mentions how her upbringing around all these fortune tellers and psychics and her abusive parents and superstitions and all that shaped her, and how losing 12 children before one even survived put her in a bad spot mentally. Mm-hmm. He says she developed an unhealthy, almost obsessive relationship toward her children, and quote, the superstition in which her mentality was imbued had distorted her vision of reality so as to make her an immoral woman, unable to distinguish good from evil.
I wonder if she suffered from any like postpartum psychosis.
Well, there's some people, and this is when you mentioned how she was distanced herself from the murders by calling the victims it and that woman and just kind of not by name or she or giving them any kind of humanity.
Right.
There's some people that think she probably developed maybe a split personality disorder or a severe form of like schizophrenia or something where she maybe she kind of blacked out, didn't know what she was doing when she was doing this. And then,
yeah, but she remembers it so clearly.
That's true. That's true.
She remembers doing it. She can show them how she did it. It's just, I'm not a psychologist or a psychiatrist or I don't know. Obviously, something was going on. I'm not going to try and diagnose somebody without really knowing, but something was obviously going on.
There was definitely something going on mentally with her, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
However, we all know she would do anything to stay with her children and that she had already confessed to her crimes to save her oldest son from prosecution as well. So some historians in Italy who were able to read her entire memoir, which I would could not find online in its entirety in English. I tried so hard to find the whole thing, but I couldn't. But they believe that she did kill for greed and that she wrote the memoir citing all of her superstitious beliefs in an effort to be institutionalized instead of found sane and then found guilty, because that would have landed her to the death penalty.
This is true.
So maybe she was playing the, quote, crazy card so she could appear to be insane or mentally unstable just so they wouldn't put her to death.
Yeah.
And she could, like, at least have life in prison, but at least her children would still be alive.
Yeah, that is interesting. I do wonder.
So the question is, was she really superstitious and mentally ill and thought that all of this stuff, she needed to trade a life for a life? Or did she do it? Did she concoct that story later on because she was just killing for greed? Because she never had anything growing up.
She committed these murders and she didn't really try and hide it. I mean, she did because she chopped the people up and made them into soaps and tea cakes. But when she's confronted with it, it's like, okay, I did it. And then she writes a book and then she demonstrates. It's like she doesn't realize that it's wrong. Do you get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
She's not saying, I'm sorry I did it. Here's my reasoning. You know, I shouldn't have done it. I'm sorry. It's like, yeah, I did it. Here's how I did it. Watch how I did it. No worries. Like,
watch how I did it. I'll
watch how
you.
I did it. Like, she's not realizing that it was wrong. She's continuing to almost justify it of, I did this to protect my children. And she doesn't really have any remorse for it, which to me points to something obviously going on mentally with her.
Right.
I think regardless, she has to have something mentally going on with her. But she just doesn't seem to have that remorse. It's just, yeah, I did it. Here's my reasoning why.
I think as long as her children are alive, there's not going to be any remorse. Like, if one of her children had died or something bad would have happened because of this, if Giuseppe would have been put in jail or anything like that, I think then she would have probably felt remorse.
Because she would have felt remorse for her kid going to jail, not for what she did.
That's like people that cry and say they're sorry that they robbed a bank. And I'm like, you're not sorry that you robbed a bank. You're sorry that you got caught.
You're sorry you got caught. Yeah. But it doesn't even seem like she's crying or upset about
no,
it.
No, not at all.
My kid is safe and that's what matters. And I'm not going to feel they were just a means to an end for me.
Right.
And that almost seems like narcissistic and sociopathic. I know I said I wasn't going to try and quote diagnose anybody, but to me, those are traits of like a narcissist or a sociopath.
But there's a lot going on with her.
Yes.
Like a lot. And she had a traumatic childhood. And it's not like she had therapy or doctors or friends or anybody to like help her out. It was abusive from the beginning. And tragedy from the beginning.
It goes to the whole nature versus nurture. And with people who do kill and serial killers, is it, are they born with it? Is mm-hmm. there that like serial killer gene, or do the circumstances that they grow up in kind of put them on that path?
Yeah.
What is it? Is if she would have had a different childhood where maybe her mother accepted her more and realized it's not your fault that you were born from these really awful circumstances. Mm-hmm. I'm going to love you and give you the best life possible. And if she would have given that chance, would she have turned out differently? And you wonder too about, you know, she had, well, did she have miscarriages or was it?
I think some were stillborn.
Okay. I wonder, and I guess in her mind it was prophetic of I'm going to lose these children, but I wonder just her upbringing, the stress put on her growing up, her mental health issues. I'm sure she wasn't in the best physical condition growing up. No. Doesn't seem like she was very well taken care of.
No.
Did that add to her having some physical problems that caused these miscarriages, or the constant worry, I've been told I'm going to lose all my children, and the stress that puts on her body as she's pregnant,
yeah,
maybe causes her to miscarry. Just almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
She had a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety, probably. I mean, she was poor. She probably didn't have the best diet. She didn't eat mm-hmm. the best foods, maybe. And it was a hard time, you know, it was a hard time back then.
I wonder if she would have had a different upbringing, what she would have been like.
Probably not a murderer.
Or would she have been? Was she always destined to be put on this path?
That's true. But I mean, her reasons that she gives is that I need to save my children. I killed to save my children. Well, maybe if her mom would have loved her a little more and showed her what, like, and I'm not trying to blame her mom or anything, but it's just like, if she learned early on what a mother typically is, like how they care for their children and mm-hmm. don't abuse them, and basically then her she wouldn't have felt a need probably to protect her children, because she already would have anyway. Right. I mean, she sounded like she did love her children anyway, but
I mean, my mom loves me, but I don't think she's going to murder and make soap out of people. Like
my mom makes homemade soap all the time. And
do you know where it comes from? Can you imagine being,
I mean, listen, we are a family of deer hunters. Like growing up, we hunted a lot because it's how you got meat back in the day. And if my mom can make homemade soap and then she could cut up a body that good, she needed to be out there helping us butcher the deer. All right. And she was never out there. So I'm just saying, mama didn't help and she could have.
Maybe mama was doing something else with the. No, I know your mother. I know your mom would not do that. I love your mom.
It's like, too, and this is kind of, it might be a kind of a bad comment to make, but all these people that are like serial killers and do all these crimes and do crimes. I feel like their talents could be used in other places.
Yes.
It's like if she can butcher a body in 12 minutes and like make it damn near perfect, you could be a killer in a butcher shop.
Be a butcher. Or be a doctor. Be a doctor.
How good
who
is
can,
that?
Like,
yeah.
Study the human body.
Like, let's channel that energy into something else that is more helpful to people. That's like Frank Abagnale in Catch Me If You Can. Like, he forged checks and he poses airline pilots and lawyers and everything else. And it got to the point where the FBI was asking him for advice on counterfeit checks. He mm-hmm. ended up working with the FBI because he was so good.
I remember thinking that I listened to a big podcast on Israel Keyes,
yeah,
which is one serial killer that I didn't know that much about. It was just kind of surprising because of how prolific he was. But listening to interviews with him and knowing about the lengths that he took to do certain things, I'm like, you were crazy, but you were very intelligent, very smart. And if you would have just taken what you had and put it into something positive, you could have really done something good in this world. Instead, yeah. You chose to kill people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I would like to do something on him, but that's a deep dive because he was.
Oh, there's a lot going on.
Wow.
There.
But yes, he was so intelligent. Like Ted Bundy. Ted Bundy was a very intelligent and charismatic person who was an attorney. He was a lawyer. He defended himself in court. And I think
badly,
but still, like, I'm like, you could have done good in this world if you
honestly think if Ted Bundy would not have been a serial killer and we'd have kept the route that he did, I think he would have eventually made a congressional run in his life.
He did seem like a politician.
Right? I mean, he's charismatic. People seem to like him a lot. He worked for the governor's office or did something in, like, I think Washington or one of the states where he lived. I don't know. I don't remember exactly all the details because there's a lot going on with him. But I mean, you know, he went to law school and he was like in politics and all. I honestly think that he would have run for some kind of state office, maybe governor, and then maybe he would have made a Senate run one day. Mm-hmm. And he probably would have got elected because everybody liked him. They talked about how charismatic he was and, mm-hmm. you know, how smart he was and how just easy he was to talk to. And he was likable.
That's why people apparently didn't think he could do what he did, because of those characteristics.
I know. And it's like, no, you have to go be a serial killer, but you can do some good for the world. Okay, but whatever.
Can you, and this is just another thing I thought of, but can you imagine being one of her neighbors who bought soap from her? Be like, oh that's so God. Nice, she made me soap. And then to find out what happened, be like, I was washing myself with people soap. This is disgusting. God.
I mean, on one hand, it's soap, so
it's made out of people fat, Dana.
It's made out of people fat. I would be more disgusted about eating the cakes.
Well, yes, yes, for sure, because you've ingested that.
That's like the water in the Elisa Lam Cisa Hotel thing. I couldn't. I would have to drink a lot of water to flush my system out of that to feel okay with it.
Oh,
clean water, like filtered water.
Multiple times.
Not
multiple
tap water
times. Bottled water bought from Walmart.
I need some kind of system flush.
All I'm drinking from now on.
So the lesson here is, if you have a vice, channel it into something good,
please.
The Criminology Museum in Rome has some artifacts on display from this case, including the pot that she used to boil her victims up.
Ew, that's
in.
Gross.
I wish I would have known about this museum, though, on my study abroad trip in college. I would have went.
What part of Italy is it?
That she was at?
Or, like, the museum and stuff?
Oh, it's in Rome.
Or it's in Rome? Oh, I wish I would have done it.
I know.
Well, that was a good story. That was gross, but it was a good story.
I'm glad you liked it. I figured you'd find it interesting.
Another cannibalism story.
My next one has no cannibalism.
Good. I don't really know what my next one's going to be yet.
I need to finish a book.
But I need to decide, like, today what it's going to be.
Okay. You should put a bunch of topics in, a jar and then pull one out.
I have a whole list in my phone.
All right. Well, I will see you soon then. I mean, I'll talk to you in, like, an hour.
Yes. I mean, we're going to text as soon as we finish. That's probably how it is. But
I hope everybody is doing all right, staying safe, wear a mask. COVID cases are still getting bad again. So it's not over.
It's never been over. So please just, we are in November and we had our first, like, COVID podcast, I remember, in March, where we talked about wearing masks.
Oh, wow.
Yes. I remember podcasting and talking about wearing a mask.
If we can all just buckle down for a little bit longer, then we can all, like, come out of it a lot faster.
Yes, please.
So we'll see you guys next week. Find us on Instagram, Twitter.
Not next week. 2 weeks.
Okay. We'll see you in 2 weeks. Thank you. You can find us on Instagram and Twitter. Send us an email at darkersideoflifepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you're up to. Send us any story ideas. Have any cool ghost pictures or anything? Yeah, just say what's up.
Just say hi. Review us. We love it.
Oh, we do. We have got some good reviews from people lately, too, and they made me so happy.
Thank you to R.L. Stein, which I love that name.
Best username ever.
For calling out our deep dives into stories. So thank you for that.
And we will see you guys in 2 weeks.
We will see you guys later.
Bye.
Bye.
I pooped.
Can't do this. You thought you were going to have problems with the Italian.